Why
But
should it be?
honeycomb geometry is consistent whether they're organic or trucked about.
Ah, but it isn't. That's what I found. It's not. It's the same geometry, but what the corporate folks have done, and they've basically done it out of the profit motive, to make the bee industry more productive, more successful, more above the bottom line versus below the bottom line, all that stuff. Starting a couple hundred years ago, they started turning out on machines what they call foundation, which is basically an artificial template where you have a machine that in a matrix, probably metal, it can be plastic now, they stamp out what's called foundation honeycomb.
Okay.
And the bees are they put this in these wooden structures, the hives, and the bees build their natural honeycomb with wax
Right.
on this foundation. It's like a
Okay.
template.
I can understand how that would add to the bottom line, cut some time off the bee building and all the rest of it,
Well, it's even more interesting.
but this has been going on for a couple hundred years,
It's
so
even
why
more.
is it just showing up now?
Well, this is where things get really interesting. That's why, as part of our program tonight, I wanted to do some background on the physics and how the physics intersects with this problem slash solution. So it turns out that a couple hundred years ago, they started building this standard honeycomb, putting it in the bees in the artificial farms, and the bees would build on it. They noticed that the honeycomb that they were making was bigger than the natural honeycomb of the wild bees. And then they noticed something even more intriguing, that bigger honeycomb seemed to beget bigger bees. Bigger bees have bigger legs, bigger wings, they can fly farther, they can forage better, they have more energy, they have longer proboscises, which are the tongues that dip into the nectar of the flower.
Right.
They can get at flowers that the little bees, the normal bees, as these guys saw it, couldn't get to. And the bottom line was they could produce, for a given number of bees, bigger bees, the theory was, would produce more honey, which you would then sell to make more money.
Sure.
Or in
Okay.
terms of the pollination side, where the bees are basically trucked around not to make honey, but just to pollinate.
Right.
They would be able to pollinate more fields faster per day than the smaller bees, that kind of thing. So you could charge more for bigger bees. It turns out that that's the source of the problem, Art,
Because?
because the bigger combs are somehow deleterious. They're somehow having an incredible negative influence now on the bees themselves,
Why
and
now?
they leave.
Yeah, why now?
Well, that gets back to what is the honeycomb doing? Remember, our model, the model of the hyperdimensional physics, is that reality in three dimensions is immersed in this constant sea of invisible waves in the ether, vibrating, sloshing back and forth, rippling out from rotating planets like little pebbles that you drop in a pond, whatever. And it's the interaction of all these various spinning masses. It's all rotation, 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 all the way down to the atomic level, where
Okay.
things are in constant spinning motion, right?
Yes.
And it's the geometry of the honeycomb which tends to amplify certain frequencies of this background field of invisible radiation. Now, I'm not talking electromagnetics. I'm not talking radio waves or whatever. I'm talking something even more fundamental that I discovered a couple of years ago as part of our ongoing research into how this physics worked. It turns out that there is a huge body of physics that's been hidden because of the Cold War from the West, where the Russians have done stunning, amazing, replicatable experiments, particularly one guy named Nicholas Kozarev we're going to talk about. And they're calling this whole field torsion field physics. Torsion is another word for spin and rotation. And when I got this data, which is on the web, and lots and lots of papers that have not been translated, that are in Russian that I would love to be able to read. But what's on there that has been translated was a stunning aha, because every experiment that I had thought of over the years to do to test the hyperdimensional model, it turns out the torsion field guys, starting with Nicholas Kozarev back in the 20s and 30s in the Stalinistic Soviet Union, had thought of and done. And when I got this data a couple of years ago, it was like a $10 million Christmas present. It was every experiment in hyperdimensional physics that Enterprise has never had the money to actually go out and be able to do. And it came to me by way of my dear friend David Wilcock, who is a brilliant guy. I mean, he saw this relationship between the Russian work and what I've been talking about before I did, and brought it to my attention. And that's why we have wound up working together. In fact, you and I and he did a program in May of 2000, the night that Jean Mailov was murdered, where we talked about this physics and the climate change, which is going on not just on Earth, but all over the solar system, which is mandated by this fundamental systemic change in this background physics, in this relationship of the torsion fields of various spinning planets and the sun, and it even impacts life. It turns out that this torsion physics applies to everything we can see. It's the glue that knits together reality, including, as Evelyn Pagnini was saying in the first hour, consciousness. It's what you basically are tinkering with, Art, when you do these mass consciousness experiments. You synchronize the minds of the millions of Coast people, the Coast family that is listening to us right now. You get them in resonance. You then direct that resonance in the torsion field to accomplish something. And through an actual measurable physics, and the experiments are stunning. They're absolutely stunning. They're so predictive. They so explain what's going on in so many areas that look like they're separate, but they're really not. They're really connected. And so I started thinking, okay, geometry, bees, bee sizes, the physics changes. Because of economics, the commercial beekeepers have built bigger combs that make bigger bees. And it turns out that these bigger combs are very unhealthy places for bees to live. The stunning difference between the natural wild bees and or the organic bee farmers that use much smaller comb size as their foundation and the commercial guys is that the natural bees, the organic bees, don't have a mite problem, either the varroa or the trachea mites, which are the two banes of bee existence now in the last 30 or 40 years that are killing bees left and right unless you use massive doses of pesticides and fungicides and all kinds of basically, you know, pest killers.
But the one question you have not asked or answered yet is, what has changed this year?
I think it is a frequency of the tone of the background physics that the combs, in fact, are amplifying.